Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Regan McCarthy, sitting in for Tom Flanagan. Today we're talking about Tallahassee's trees. They're beautiful, and the city's known for them, but they're also responsible for some of the trouble we saw following Hurricane Hermine, including damaged homes and downed power lines. Joining us today to talk about that are Perry Odom, an electric utility arborist, Jennifer McGavro, an urban forestry specialist with the city, and Stan Rosenthal, a forester with Big Bend Forestry and an extension agent emeritus. To our listeners, if you'd like to join our conversation, I want to remind you can do that by giving us a call at 414-1234. If you're outside the Tallahassee area, call us at 1-800-926-8809. You can also email us at perspectives@wfsu.org or find us on Twitter at WFSUPerspective. Just to get started here, Perry, it might be good to start with you just to sort of talk about following Hurricane Hermine. We saw a lot of damage, and it really affected you guys, I think. Tell us a little bit about just your experience. What did you see there?
Well, Reagan, we had a little over 1,000 different locations where trees had caused an outage and or power lines actually being torn down. 17 of our transmission lines were out due to trees falling on the transmission lines. We worked actually 24 hours a day for the first 8 days after the storm, and believe me, we kept busy the whole time.
Mm-hmm. And so I think the number was after the storm, like 80% of the Tallahassee utilities customers lost power. Would you say it's safe to say most of that was due to falling trees or tree limbs?
Yes, I would, yes.
Yeah. And what kind of damage was it that we saw? Was it tree limbs, trees?
It was both. A lot of times the top of the tree would break out in the wind. A lot of times the whole tree would topple over. Broken limbs, it all sometimes only takes one limb falling across the power lines to cause an outage.
Mm-hmm. And Stan, mm-hmm. in your opinion, is that the normal kind of damage that you would see after a small hurricane like that?
To see
both trees and limbs falling down?
Well, what I would say after I had looked at what Hermine had done is the University of Florida, and this is information that's been out for quite some time, studied 11 different hurricanes in Florida over a period of years. Dr. Mary Duray led this episode. And pretty much what happened was a predictable event from that research. And one of the main things I've tried to get across is a lot of it was avoidable. I'm talking people's yards and things like that, too. And, you know, it's not just the power lines that we're doing, but we've got the research now and the knowledge out there so that I, myself, and other people that I know that applied that didn't have nearly the problems that some of the surprises, shall we say, that some people had.
Mm-hmm. And Jennifer, what about you? Did you sort of see the same thing? And I think Stan brought up a good point. Did some of the damage that you see take place mostly on city property, on homeowners' properties? What's sort of your view of that?
From what I observed after the storm came through, it was a lot of both. You know, a lot originated from right-of-ways, from city yard or from private yards. You know, tree debris is indiscriminate. It came from vacant lots everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, Stan, sort of what you were getting to mm-hmm. is that a lot of that damage we saw, though, could have been prevented.
Yeah. You know, interestingly, about 2 weeks after the hurricane had gone through, I flew into Tallahassee from someplace else. And when I looked down from the sky, what did I see? I saw pretty much what I saw when I left. So it's actually a really small percentage of trees that actually did damage. And this goes along with what the research showed. I know two hurricanes that hit Pensacola like a decade or so ago. They were talking 1 to 3% between those two hurricanes of trees actually did damage. So it's actually a very small amount. And I'm not talking about twigs and stuff in the yard, but ones that would fall on roofs and things like that. And the infrastructure is there. We've got an army of certified arborists in this area now. Nora Meese, who is the head of International Society of Arboriculture, who certifies arborists in Florida, he told me, Stan, he says, there's more arborists per capita certified arborists with them than anywhere else in the state of Florida. So we've got people out there, and then urban foresters and people like myself that have this knowledge and are trying to help people manage their trees better. But apparently some people didn't get it or didn't apply it.
Mm-hmm. It looks like we've got a caller here on the line. Let's go ahead and go to that caller. Elizabeth, welcome to Perspectives.
Hi. I just wanted to make the point that I've been thinking since the hurricane about how many benefits we get from having an extraordinary amount of trees in Tallahassee, cooling the town, which, you know, we can use all the cooling we can get most of the time. And, you know, it helps reduce carbon in the environment and so forth. And it, you know, creates a lot of beauty. But perhaps the city could have a program, you know, perhaps it could be called something like Living with Trees, where there's a more aggressive outreach to citizens to figure out what kinds of trees need to be next planted near structures or power lines, and what kinds of trees are less likely to break off, and, you know, perhaps emphasizing as well, you know, native trees. I think nurseries and, you know, the extension service, and as they were mentioning, there are a lot of resources to help. You could put flyers out in the utility bills and perhaps send people out to look at a tree to help people decide if, you know, that one might need to come down. Maybe even help homeowners with the expense of getting trees down that could prove to be a threat to especially the power infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting idea, Elizabeth. Thanks for your call. Stan, it looks like you might have a thought on that.
Yeah, I've got a lot of thoughts on that. Thanks, Elizabeth. The other thing that we were talking about, and I'm going to start with the beginning because you brought a lot of points, benefits of trees. What we found out is that during storms, trees actually help protect structures. Flying debris was one big issue. So the idea, I've had some people say, well, you know, I want to take all my trees out because I don't want to worry about that. Well, the flying debris from your neighbor's lot or whatever, it could be a big issue. And then we've also got some preliminary research showing that it helps protect structures just from breaking some of that energy of the wind load that comes in. As far as public education, I just spent a career doing that. We're doing it right now. That information's out there. We've wrote newspaper articles, TV shows, radio shows, public speaking, and I know that on a daily basis, these arborists that we aforementioned, as well as my colleagues here, Jennifer and Perry, we're constantly talking to people. I think people have to listen more. That's all I can say.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, what about you? Is there a program or something like that that the city's currently doing to help educate people about trees?
Yeah, from the standpoint with right-of-ways, I'm in community beautification. With those trees in the right-of-way, we are very proactive in meeting with people who have concerns about the trees in their right-of-ways. That's that area in front of your residence. If you feel a tree is hazardous, you know, they give us a call. They send it on digitally. We do an assessment. We go ahead and remediate the issue. Also, part of my position is doing also some education. I'm starting up a Facebook page. I write with Stan, you know, articles in the Democrat, telling people some of that information, you know, good tree species that are wind resistant, how to correctly plant a tree, how to recognize issues with trees. Input from the community on what they want to see with that education is valuable too.
Mm-hmm. I got one other point too. And one thing I try to help people do is, you know, sometimes I would go out in their yards, like Jennifer was just describing. I know Perry does this every day. You talk to somebody, you say, look, you know, that tree probably just needs to come down. I'm just sorry. It's got some real bad structural problems. You can't fix it. Two things. One is they like the tree. They don't want to lose it. And so what I'd say is, look, maintain a forest. It's okay to take out those small percentage of trees. You know, all trees are going to fall down someday that we know. It's kind of like death and taxes. So take those few trees out and then allow for replanting. And I know they've got replanting programs that are very effective. And you look at the word Tallahassee, it means old field. Well, it's not an old field anymore. Those trees are there because people wanted them.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I'd like to thank Elizabeth for her call and just remind all of our listeners out there that you can give us a call and join our conversation here. That number is 414-1234. If you're outside the Tallahassee area, you can call us at 1-800-926-8809 or send us an email at perspectives@wfsu.org. Stan, before our call, we were talking about you know, that a lot of the damage that we saw here in Tallahassee during Hermine could have been prevented by people maybe taking the proper steps to care for their trees. And I think a lot of people are thinking about that now after the storm. They're looking at the trees in their yard that didn't fall down. So what would you say to people who are wondering, you know, how to know whether they need to be doing something for the trees they've got?
Great question. Until I retired, there was a position at the Extension office, that was me, that was providing all this education. The certified arborists in this area, there's a lot of them that really are more into tree management than tree removal. They can help you. Then there's, you know, people like Jennifer and Perry, I mean, when you catch them. There's lots of information on the web. You can go to the University of Florida's webpage and just, you know, Google tree and hurricanes. They've got mountains of information, slideshows that you can watch, articles that you can read. You'll get a lot of information out of something like that.
We were talking before the show a little bit about this idea, I think, that people have that they're, you know, maybe the city is like not supportive of Tallahassee trees. Like, Perry, maybe you just want to cut them all down to make room for your electric utilities. And you know, that there's this idea that there are good tree people and bad tree people. But we were saying, you guys, everyone here, you love trees. You're here because you support trees. And I guess, Stan, that what you were saying about there are arborists who are interested in maintaining trees, not cutting trees down, brought that to mind. And it made me wonder, how can somebody look for an arborist like that? How can we make sure, you know, we're finding the good guy? And I guess we'll talk about that as soon as we get back from our break here. Welcome back to Perspectives. We're talking about trees here in our city of Tallahassee. And Stan, right before the break, we were getting into a discussion about how to maybe protect your trees from future damage, how to assess a tree to see if it's damaged, and how to find an arborist who maybe will focus more on maintaining trees, making your trees healthy, and doesn't just want to take them down.
You know, you can get somebody like me with a degree in forestry, but really the great program that I and the rest of my colleagues have been pushing for years is a certification by the International Society of Arboriculture called ISA. And they've got a web page, and you can actually go to the University of Florida Extension web page here in Leon County and find a publication called How to Hire a Tree Service. And it has the web page on it, or you could just Google International Society of Arboriculture, and you put your zip code into this spot where it says how to hire a tree service, and it lists the certified arborist in your area. That's number one. Then, of course, you want to check for insurance, and this publication that I mentioned is kind of explains that. Anything you want to add to that, Perry?
No, I think that the local arborists that have ISA certified arborists on staff are all reputable companies. I would not object to hiring any of them to do work in my yard.
Yeah.
All right. Looks like we've got some more callers on our line here. I want to go back to the phones again. On line one there, we've got John, who's got a question for Perspectives. John, welcome to the Perspectives.
Hey, how's it going? I'm from Taylor County. I'm in the timber industry doing planted yellow pine logging here in Taylor County. But historically, we have used some of our equipment to do a little tree work in Leon County, and it's gotten to the point now, and a lot of my business friends up there in Leon County, you know, are having a lot of problems get landowners to pull permits. From what I understand, we just quit logging up there. But from what I understand, you need to pull a permit to cut a tree in Leon County. And I just wanted to hear a little bit of that discussion on the air.
Jennifer, is that something that you might have an answer to? Do you know much about that?
No, unfortunately, that sounds more like an ordinance or a permitting issue, which will probably be growth management.
Mm-hmm. Do either of our other panelists know about the permitting process to cut a tree? Perry?
John, logging operations and normal arboricultural issues for logging are not permittable, or they don't need a permit. Most of the permitting is for trees, individual trees in someone's yard.
Yeah, you know, if you're a bona fide agricultural exemption on your property, you have a thing called Right Farm Act. And as long as you follow what they call forestry best management practices, which has some wildlife benefits, but mostly water quality, you can log. You know, you want to do a good job, but there's no restrictions on forest management. If you're not with an agricultural exemption and you're a homeowner, there can be more restrictions if you're building or something like that. But that also brings up a good question. I do get some people that call me, and they want to have a logger take the trees out of their yard. Well, I'd recommend a certified arborist with equipment to drop trees around houses and power lines and things. After they're cut down, if they're cut into the proper length, it's great if a logger can utilize them. And there are some loggers that do that, and that's a wonderful thing rather than sending them to the landfill or chipping them up or something.
All right. Thanks for your question, John.
Yeah.
Let's keep moving here through the phone lines. We've got some more questions coming up. Let's go to line two here. We've got Lynn, who's got a question for our panelists. Welcome to Perspectives, Lynn.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad you took my call. I've got a few questions. Maybe we don't have time. I think they're all very relevant. Number one, I am just curious. Do you have any knowledge of, like, tornado spinoffs from it? Because the way my neighborhood got, you know, taken out, that's what some of the neighbors also thought. Could that be a possibility?
Mm-hmm. I've heard some other people mention something like that. I don't think we've got any hurricane or weather experts here on our panel. But I think that mostly we're just here talking about trees. Do you have some questions specifically about trees or tree damage?
I do indeed.
Great.
There is a thing called hangers, branches that don't come all the way down. I had two up to 30 foot long, maybe 8 inches diameter. I got them taken down yesterday. And by the way, two good bits of advice. Get estimates ASAP. Tree people, arborists, and roofers are very busy, obviously. Would that be covered for insurance, from insurance, if it's a month later or whatever it is? You know, you're trying to get the branches cut down, but everybody's busy. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Perry, it looks like you've got a response for that.
Yeah. Yeah, the maintenance of trees is not usually a claim for insurance. They will only cover damage done from trees.
Mm-hmm.
They never cover the removal or anything of the trees. Is that correct?
That's correct. The only exception is if you can prove that the tree was struck by lightning. Some insurance companies will pay for the removal of a tree struck by lightning.
Okay, they'll cover for roofing, you know, there's that big whatever discount, whatever it's called. Would they call for example, if these, what they call hangers, these large branches which have not come down all the way, if they came down, like, let's say, yesterday, do you know if the insurance company would cover this and definitely caused by the hurricane?
That question I can't answer.
Yeah, some of those things get kind of sticky. One of the things that you can do is you could get a certified arborist or forester to say it was caused by it. Of course, if you had pictures and time and dates and stuff, that would help you too. But sometimes some of these can get into legal issues.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, is checking in with maybe a certified forester or arborist to come to your property or your insurance agent. I mean, none of us here sitting at the table are insurance experts, but I think that might be a place where you could find more information is by talking with your insurance agent. Thanks for your call, Lynn. Let's see. I wanted to talk a little bit about, Lynn mentioned that idea of hangers, right? Big limbs that are still hanging down, maybe sort of perched in trees after storms. I'm seeing some of those around Tallahassee still. Do you guys think that's still a concern? Could those still come down and cause damage?
You know, the first thing you want to do is you want to say all trees have risk potential. So the next question is that risk something that could cause a problem? So the first answer is if it's in the back 40 woods and no one ever goes there, it's not a problem. If it's overhanging a important power line, well, then it would be, or where the kids have the swing set. The next thing is if you have a threat like that, then can you move the occupation of it out of there? In other words, if you've just moved the swing set, then you don't have to deal with that. Then lastly, if you can't do any of those things, yeah, then it's time to remove it.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Let's keep going with our phones here. It looks like we've got some more callers coming in. You guys are a popular panel this afternoon. On line three here, we've got Gail. It looks like she's wondering about county programs maybe. Gail, welcome to Perspectives.
Oh, thank you so much. If I live out in the county and you've talked a lot about programs, I think that University of Florida website will definitely be helpful to me.
Oh, good.
But does Talquin or the city of Tallahassee have arborists that would come and help me with trees that are overhanging the power lines that haven't been cut down yet?
Yes, ma'am. If you are a city of Tallahassee electric customer, we do offer customer requests or handle customer requests.
Mm-hmm. I actually don't. I have Talquin.
Yeah, well, Talquin will do it, too.
Yeah, Talquin has the same program. If you would need them to come out.
I appreciate this very much. Yes, that's a very popular call-in. Goodbye.
Thanks so much. Thanks for your question. Perry, you were saying that both the city of Tallahassee and as far as you know, Talquin and probably a lot of utility companies offer a service to help homeowners assess their trees?
Well, we don't do so much assessment as we actually will come out and have our contractor trim the trees that are endangering the power lines, or if, like the previous caller, if there are hangers out over the power lines, we will have our contractor come out and remove those before they fall onto the lines.
Mm-hmm. And that's something you said that you'll do in response to a call from a customer. I assume you guys are monitoring for that type of thing also.
Absolutely. We have a maintenance program where we go through the entire service territory every 18 months. We trim the trees to keep them clear from the power lines. And we also have contractors and our own employees riding through the area every day. If we see a hanger that's endangering the power lines, we simply write up a work order, have a contractor come out and take care of it.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's keep going on with our questions from our listening audience here. We've got another caller here on line five. It looks like she has some questions about power lines. Deb, welcome to Perspectives.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to say that I thought the city did a tremendous job getting our power back on, and thank you. And my comment is maybe to think outside of the box a little bit. The city is doing really well in terms of advancing solar energy and other types of renewables. Well, some of these renewable resources can be provided without having a connection to the grid. Or even if they do have a connection to the grid, they work when the rest of the power line is off. So the idea is, instead of protecting the wires from the trees, think about ways to avoid the need for wires, or, you know, place some of these solar or renewable biomass resources in areas where they'll keep running even if the rest of the grid is down.
All right, Deb, thanks so much for your call. I appreciate that. I know that the city is doing some work to look into renewable resources. I know there's a big solar farm project happening now out by the airport, and that's a thing that the city is focusing on. Perry, I know that's not your area of expertise. You deal more directly with the trees that are impacting power lines. Do you have any kind of thoughts about, you know, would there be plans to move more power lines underground, and would that reduce the impact that trees have on power lines?
Well, we do put power lines underground in any new subdivision. All of the lines, the overhead lines, are placed underground. To retrofit or to go back and take power lines from above ground and put them underground is very expensive, not only to the city electric department, but also to the customer. They would have to retrofit the lines that actually feed their house. So it's not just a cost to the city, but it is a cost to the customers to do so. And as to a solar farm, yes, the city is in the process of building a solar farm. It's going to be a 20 megawatt farm that will add to our resources.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Before we started taking some of our calls here, we were talking a little bit about damage that maybe Hurricane Hermine caused, or maybe just any storm caused to a tree, and the need to be sure that we get somebody who's certified to maybe look at that, help us maintain our trees. I wonder, I might wonder, can I go outside and just look at my tree myself and know, you know, can you guys give me some tips maybe for something that I could look for to know that my tree needs attention?
You know, back when I was with the University of Florida Extension, we did a lot of training on that, including master gardeners. So here's what I'll tell you. It's kind of this, we got to remember these are living organisms. So it's kind of like saying, do we need a doctor all the time? Yeah, I mean, I know when I've got a cold, and I know when I've got, you know, I ate the wrong thing or a headache. And so there's a lot of small things that people do. Now, I will tell you that there are a lot of things they don't know. I mean, a layperson doesn't know. So, yeah, it's, you know, anything you can do in the right direction is a good thing. Don't assume, though, that you can become a doctor overnight.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that customers can do is to look for hollows, look for rotten cavities in the tree, either in the stem of the tree or actually down near the roots themselves. That's always an indication that the tree is possibly hollow or at least rotten in the middle. And if the stem of the tree is rotten, then the roots are rotten.
You know, that really brings up a good point. So some of the things that we taught was, you know, get a visual of what the crown looks like. If the leaves are really thinning, that's not a good sign. That means the tree's probably stressed. A lot of times that's what happened underground. There's a thing called U-shape and V-shape joints. So if you take the letter U, that's a strong joint on a tree generally. And a V-shape isn't. And the reason why is each stem gets thicker. And as it gets thicker, if you take the letter V, it pushes it apart. And that's often when we see our old field-grown live oaks fail. And a lot of other trees, you know, you look around, V-shaped joints is another one of those big ones that you can look for.
Mm-hmm. And so you guys are saying that if you spot something like that, then it might be time to turn to one of those certified arborists like we mentioned.
Absolutely.
Very good. Well, it looks like we're coming up on a break here. I want to remind I want to remind listeners that they can give us a call at 414-1234, or if you're outside the Tallahassee area, you can call us at 1-800-926-8809. You can also send us an email on perspectives@wfsu.org or find us on Twitter at WFSU Perspective. It looks like we've got some more callers on the line. Let's go to our calls here. On line one, we've got Marshall, who's got a few questions for our panel. Marshall, welcome to Perspectives.
Thank you.
Hi, Marshall, do you have a question for our panelist?
Oh, yes. I wanted to point out something for emphasis that one of your panel mentioned. And that's the tree standing alone outside a forest. I noticed where some of the bad falls were on Centerville Road by the hospital, on Miccosukee Road, off Kessel, on the east side of Benton Hills, places like that. They're all areas where developments have gone in and cut, clear cut basically, and then according to the city requirements and specifications, they would leave 50-foot buffers. Unfortunately, when you take a 50-foot strip of woods and put it out there to stand by itself after it's been standing as an element of a big forest, it's going to blow over. And that's what happened in all of those cases. And it's a little significant because when you put in developments like Select and the Surgery and some of those places, they really set up the property owners that are on the other side of that 50-foot buffer to have a lot of trees go down and cause a lot of damage. And I just wanted to point that out as something that they may want to emphasize a little bit more to people.
Yeah, the University of Florida's research actually backs that up. We know that in new developments, trees don't survive as well as in old developments, and that's because generally of root destruction. And then the other thing is that when a tree grows in a forest, we found out that trees growing in groups did better. And so when you – it's just kind of like the trees help protect the structures some from wind load. It also – they protect each other from that, and their roots are intertwined a lot. So, yeah, it's very important that you assess trees after a development like that. Well, it's best to assess them before, take out trees that already have problems, then take out the trees that got, avoid causing some of those problems to trees, and then, yeah, it goes on.
All right, thanks so much for that answer. We'll be back with more of that after this break. Welcome back to Perspectives. I'm Regan McCarthy, sitting in for Tom Flanagan. Today on Perspectives, we're talking about trees in Tallahassee, and it looks like we've got a lot of callers who are interested in today's subject. I want to remind all our listeners that you can also join us in our conversation today by giving us a call at 414-1234. On line three here, we've got Carol, who has a question about the types of trees to be planting in Tallahassee. Carol, welcome to Perspectives.
Thank you very much. I have paid a lot of attention to trees and growing things because I enjoy that. I've gone through the Master Gardener program, and I was made aware that there are a lot of native trees that are not quite so popular as some of the more exotic trees. So the native trees would be easier to care for, and I'm wondering which of those native trees would be stronger in wind and rainstorms and might be better choices for individuals at their homes or developers as they're developing new areas.
All right. Thanks for that question, Carol. Jennifer, do you have thoughts
Absolutely,
on that?
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of the native trees are excellent for their wind resistance, for their root structure, their stability in storms like this. A lot of those are the live oaks. We've got hickory, pecan. Another great one is the black gum. These are also trees we usually target with our Adopt-a-Tree program for that reason. We want to go ahead and put in canopy trees that can handle these storm situations. They've just proven through their time and their adaptability that they are good Florida trees for our weather situations.
Yeah, you know, and again, there are actually lists on this University of Florida webpage for both North and South Florida where they know – we know which species are more adopted to high winds. And you mean you think about it. Hurricanes have been hitting Florida for a long time, so you got evolution on your side here. That's one reason why live oaks, they're adopted to this coastal kind of environment. And so it's not just how you manage the tree both above and below ground, but tree selection is important too. And I've done a little bit of work with Perry, and he always has some thoughts about heights of trees around power lines. And, you know, some of this stuff that we get into is because we didn't think about it 40 years ago.
Absolutely, Stan. Planting trees near power lines is fine as long as those trees have a mature height of probably no more than about 15 feet tall. That way I don't have to come in and prune the tree to keep it out of the power lines. Taller trees are acceptable as long as they're planted back far enough away from the lines so that they won't fall if we have a storm.
Mm-hmm. What if somebody wants to follow that rule? So they want to make sure that they're using that mid-sized tree that'll fit under the power lines. How can they find out how tall a tree grows?
Well, again, the University of Florida website has websites that show the heights of trees. I have a brochure that was developed by the Florida Urban Forestry Council that lists trees, native trees in this area, with a lot of information about the trees, including the height of those trees. If you go to the talgov.com website, I have a list of trees that are acceptable and recommended for planting near power lines.
And I want to go back to what the caller was talking about earlier about promoting native trees. And there's a lot of good reasons to do that, you know, with wildlife and whatnot. But, you know, it's interesting. I would say that, China berry, obviously they're not from here. I would say they're disproportionately represented in woodpiles after storms. Okay? In other words, some of these plants that people have allowed to grow that aren't native to here, some of them aren't from areas where high winds happen once in a while in their lifetime. And you got to remember, a tree can last a long time. So if we only get strong winds every 5 years, that's still enough to prevent trees from maturing. Well, some of these trees aren't very good selections for that. And so native, yeah.
A lot of them are selected because they're considered excellent shade trees because they put a lot of canopy on. But what you don't always get is a matching root growth. So you don't have that stability. You've got a top-heavy tree.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, you were talking just a moment ago about the Tallahassee's Adopt-A-Tree program. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about what that program is. How does that work?
We do this program every fall, winter, that dormant season. And what we do is we encourage people to go ahead and contact us if you're a city resident. The city will come out and plant up to two trees in your front right-of-way of your yard. We coordinate with Perry to where we offer an understory species for those folks who have overhead utilities. And then we have two canopy species that we offer as well. I believe this year we've got red oak, black gum, and then our red bud is our understory species.
Mm-hmm. And Leon County has one too, and they're doing the red cedar this year, which is really a juniper, but we call it red cedar.
And the deal with that program, if I remember correctly, is that you guys will plant the tree for me.
Absolutely, yes.
And my part of the bargain is that I have to agree to water it.
Yep. We set the homeowner up with everything they need, you know, the information they need. But, yeah, we come out. We'll strategize with you. Where do we want these trees? Where you get the most benefit from them? We'll set you up with a schedule on how often to water them, how much to water them. You know, it's a 5-gallon bucket of water twice a week. So it's a great program.
Yeah, great. You mentioned that the program happens in the fall and winter, mm-hmm. And you said that's the dormant season, which made me wonder, does that mean even if I'm not using the Adopt-A-Tree program, is this the time of year when I should be planting trees?
Yes. Do you agree?
The best time to plant trees is when the leaves are off. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like they're asleep and they're not to do too much anthropomorphism, but yeah, they're basically asleep and they're more open to that kind of stress.
Also, you're not dealing with the heat of summer. You're trying to keep up with the watering and dealing with all the heat and evaporation. I find they put on better root growth too with that dormancy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about if I either have a tree that I love in my yard or I'm planting a new tree, I want to be a good tree caretaker, should I be fertilizing my tree?
You know, that's a great question. You can get soil tests from the University of Florida, and that will tell you. But most of the time, most of the trees in native soil will do just fine without it. With fertilizer, will do a speed up growth sometimes. But, you know, that brings a really good point. I don't think we're doing a great job of soil management. And soil management is more important than I think adding inputs like fertilizers. So the number one thing you can do for a tree is mulch. 2 to 4 inches deep, not piled up against the trunk like you see sometimes, but out at least as far as the branches go. And then what you do is you recycle the leaves and the pine cones and all the acorns and whatever else falls on the tree. back to the ground. So what you're doing is you're refertilizing. The tree takes it up, and then it drops it back down, and then it takes it up. And that cycle is really the best way to fertilize a tree. And that also brings me to something I wanted to get to. I went to one of the city-county events to talk, and I found out from the city, this was like a month ago, they'd already spent $2 million on storm debris. And the county had spent $1.6 million. And I want to challenge the community because, you know, that's money we could use someplace else. And as I was just describing, we are really impoverishing our soil. So I got a really nice neighbor, ran into the other day. Hey, Stan, how you doing? Fine. I said, what are you up to? And he says, well, he says, this is my fourth pickup truck load I've taken to the dump of pine straw and sticks from that darn storm. And I'm like, hey, dude, you know, that's costing money. And he lives on 2 acres. He says, well, I don't have a place to put it. I don't believe it. That's a badly designed lawn. That's what that is. So we need to try to keep more debris on our sites when it's possible. I know when a big storm comes through, we can't always do that, and replenish our soils rather than going out buying fertilizers to replace what we've thrown away.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think something else to point out is for people who maybe have already removed that debris from their yard after mm-hmm. the storm is that a lot of that debris is being turned into mulch. Mm-hmm. So somebody who maybe is listening to us now and they say, well, gosh, I'd like to mulch my tree. I love this tree. I want to take care of it. That's another great place, I think, to go for the mulch now is hit up that storm debris.
Yeah, I've really done well for my garden and my trees by taking the debris that people take off their sites and taking those that good nutrients and applying them to my yard.
It's a form of recycling most people don't take into account.
Yeah. Yeah.
I believe the county landfill will give it away for free if you go pick it up.
Yeah.
Interesting to know. What about the compost pile in my yard? Should I scoop up some of that dirt from my compost pile and put that around my tree? Is that another good way to care for my tree?
If you want to speed up growth.
Okay. So by adding that fertilizer like that or that nutrients from my compost, that's it would make my tree grow faster.
It possibly could, depending on how much you put on it and what the tree's needs are. But it doesn't hurt. The important thing is that you're taking something and you're not sending to the landfill. I've told people, I says, look, you know, I've seen people, you know, collecting their lawn clippings and putting it outside. I says, so you want less taxes and less government, and that's what you're doing? Part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about trees' root systems. I feel like we're getting into that conversation here with this. You know, I think we mentioned after the storm, we saw a lot of limbs come down. We also saw a lot of just complete trees fall over. And Stan, I think you would agree that probably means there was a problem with the tree's root system.
Yeah. Often limited root space in urban areas is a problem. Lawnmower damage and weed whip damage, soil compaction. Soil porosity is one of our biggest problems in urban areas because we really compact the soil badly. And then there are some species that are just more prone to being wind thrown. And then, of course, as one of our previous callers talked about, changing the forest around a tree really quickly, like clear cutting around it and leaving one standing, it's very hard for a tree to adopt that quickly.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that there are some things that people might do that could damage their trees, like you were saying, the lawnmower. Mm-hmm. What can we do to avoid that type of damage?
Mulch. Mulch is kind of like eating right, getting enough sleep for us, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what about, I know I've heard people mention similar concerns with maybe some city projects that are happening, like when a city builds a sidewalk near a right-of-way. Mm-hmm. Does that endanger the safety of the tree? Is the city doing things to help protect trees during those sorts of projects?
Since I've been here, yes. We've been a part of sidewalk restoration projects, new sidewalk projects. I come in as an arborist and do an assessment where the sidewalk interferes with that critical protection zone of the tree. You know, how deep is the excavation? Can we move it out? Can we bridge it? Build up over those roots. Yeah, there's a lot more focus now on protecting trees, not just the trunk and the canopy, but looking at the roots. That's really gained a lot of interest lately.
Mm-hmm. And Oh, gosh, I just lost my train of thought. What about, Perry, I don't know if you have an exact answer for this, but I know people have been talking, like we said before, about moving utility lines underground. Is there a concern that if we do that, that could just lead to tree root damage? Is there a way to mitigate that problem?
Yes, there is. It's called boring, where you actually bore underneath the roots of the trees and then install conduits or pipes, which will in turn hold or contain those conductors, the actual power line itself. Once you're down about 3 or 4 feet deep, there is very little chance of being damaging the tree's roots.
You know, that's a really interesting concept. I think a lot of people in their head have a vision of a carrot as a tree root. And really most of the roots are in the top foot, 18 inches of soil by far. And they spell way past the branches in an unimpeded area. But the biggest limiting factor to root growth is oxygen. They carry on respiration. And so when we compact the soil, that's really huge. And guess what mulch does? It helps ameliorate that compaction and breaks up the velocity of raindrops before they hit the soil and break it apart. So that's really important.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So don't rake your leaves up, send them to the landfill, make a mulch bed around it, because that's what the forest intended, and that's how the trees grow.
Mm-hmm. What about, you know, we've talked a lot about how people are reacting following the storm. People have concerns about their trees. I know I've even heard, the mayor talking about after the storm, people maybe looked in their yard and they said, I'm worried about this tree. Maybe they've already knocked it down. Do we have a concern that maybe people are going to overreact? You know, is there a possibility that people are going to?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to tell you, I've been in this business for a while, and there's some people that are going to overreact. But most people in this community just love their trees. We really just need to, I think, just kind of better educate ourselves, be a little bit more proactive. You know, there's always going to be some trees that come down in storms that aren't predictable. But I think it's more at that level rather than we need to just, clear all the trees away from everything that they could possibly hit. I think not only would that be expensive and difficult to do, but I think it also wouldn't be necessary.
Well, what do you say to somebody who says, all right, during Hermine, a tree fell down on my neighbor's house. I saw what happened. I'm not risking it. I'm going to cut down all my trees. That's it. I don't need any trees in my yard. How do you convince them that trees are a good thing?
Well, my job wasn't to convince but to educate, which I think is a little bit different. So they've got a fear. And what I would try to talk to them about is that the trees actually do protect you. And it's actually a small percentage of trees that really usually cause that problem. And I think you're better off both financially as well as being part of the community to just, have their trees analyzed once in a while for the ones that would be like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know my colleagues do that every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, and my understanding is that trees can be used to protect your property. You know, even if you cut down all the trees in your yard, your neighbor might still have a tree. And if you have no trees in between there.
Yep. Plus flying debris.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about how that works.
Well, when you get some of these really severe hurricanes, and let's say your neighbor has a 2x4 or something that gets airborne, hopefully it's going to hit a tree before it hits your window.
Mm-hmm. How, if that's my interest, so I'm nervous after Hermine, I'm not, all right, I'll keep some of the trees I have. I'm going to get some guy to come out and look at them.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to protect my home with trees. What kind of tree is best for protecting your home?
A well-maintained tree, especially root systems and looking for structural problems. But then again, we get back to the species, like Jennifer was mentioning before. Live oaks are great. I think we overplant live oaks. Anytime you plant, you get a great tree. It's like that's what we should do all the time. We've got, you go to Turia State Park. That's one of the most diverse forests in the contiguous U.S., actually only second to the Smoky Mountains area. So we've got a ton of trees to work with, and we're really not doing a good job of diversity, which is part of the game as well. But you can go to that university webpage. I know live oaks, the white oaks are good. Most of the red oaks are pretty good, except old water oaks and laurel oaks. You've got elms are good. Help me out, guys. It just goes on.
Hickory, cypress, magnolias are great. I saw maybe one magnolia out of all the storm debris. The bulk of the debris I saw were laurel and water oaks and then the pines.
Yeah. They have like bald cypress, you know. That's the one you see in the swamps festooned with the Spanish moss, the fluted base and the knees. What we found out is in a non-overwatered lawn, you don't get the knees. We're not quite sure why, but they don't. And these things are really wind sturdy. They make a great urban tree.
Well, what's great is they shed those needles, those soft needles, and then you're just dealing with the structure. Storm goes by, and a month later they flush back out. Just a beautiful yard tree.
Yeah, they are. Underutilized.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much to my panel here for joining me today on Perspectives. Thanks to Perry Odom, Jennifer McGavro, and Stan Rosenthal. I really appreciate you guys. Perspectives is produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance is provided by Taylor Cox, with Lydell Rawls answering the phones. I'm Regan McCarthy. Please join us next week for more Perspectives here on WFSU.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.